Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 26th of September. Harry S. Truman High School is in Levittown, Pennsylvania. It's in an area where there once were good union jobs, now two decades gone. This is not a well-to-do area. The drama teacher there is spectacular. Lou Volpe has built the drama program into one of the best in America with material that is rich in content and complexity. Our guest this hour says Lou has transformed lives, thousands of them. He's like that person you never heard of who wins one of those McCarthy Genius Awards for creating astonishing success in the most unlikely of settings. And one of the lives he may have transformed is our guest, Michael, who was one of his students 36 years ago. Michael Sokolov is our guest this hour. He's the author of the beautifully written and so inspirational book, Drama High, The Incredible True Story of a Brilliant Teacher, a Struggling Town, and the Magic of Theater. Michael has written two other books, The Ticket Out, Daryl Strawberry and the Boys of Crenshaw, and Hustle, The Myth, Life, and Lies of Pete Rose. He's a contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine. He's written on a wide range of topics, from life in inner city America to eco-terrorism to presidential politics to the question of whether would-be assassin John Hinckley should go free, and many other topics. And he is with us this hour to talk about his book. We'll welcome phone calls, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, where we ask that you, these would be terrific to read. I just love stories about marvelous teachers. We invite you to share your story of a teacher who changed your life. Post that under Drama High Thread. All right, so let's get rolling because this is going to be a terrific hour. Hello, Michael. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's great to be with you.
Yeah, I love your book. You are a gifted writer. And so rather than start exactly with the beginning of the book and the students, why don't we start with you when you were invited to give the commencement address 36 years after you had graduated, which really was an inspiration in some ways for a book you always thought that you should write.
Well, that's right. In 2010, you know, a long time after I graduated high school, I was invited to give the graduation speech at my old high school on the old football field, which is, you know, a true out-of-body experience.
I'll bet.
And I'm not one of those people who says, oh, there was a sign from somewhere or, you know, but I felt that way. I felt like this story that I wanted to write about Lou Volpe, this book about the remarkable program and astonishing success of this high school's drama program that I had put off, that had always found reasons not to write, that something else was always, you know, looking like the thing I should write. When I was invited to give the speech at my old high school, I said, well, this is telling me something. I remember standing on the football field thinking, you know, this really is a sign. It's time to do this book and tell this remarkable story that's right under my nose. Because sometimes as journalists, we look far and wide for stories and don't always see what is right in front of us.
Right. And he was also a man. I can remember a teacher who said to me, a talent that I had, I'd never thought of. This was the guy who told you, and I was amazed. Nobody had told you you were a great writer because you're obviously a great writer, but he pointed out your talent to you.
Well, you know, I don't know. I certainly wasn't really a great writer when I was in 11th grade, but I had somehow reached 11th grade caring mostly about basketball, mostly about baseball, being in a community that even then didn't have great schools. Our education was okay. And I got to 11th grade, and I got to Lou Volpe's English class, and I wrote something, and he said, you know, you're a really good writer.
Mm.
And I was like, wow, really? And it was life-changing. And, you know, one of the things that I've written is that sometimes what a great teacher tells you doesn't have to be that profound. It just has to be said at the right moment and hit the right spot that no teacher or parent has ever touched before. And that
right.
was you know, that was that for me.
Yeah, I think it is for so many. And as you say, he's found that spot in so many. So many students have said he knows me better than I know myself, and has found that spot and told so many students about that. That's what, one thing that makes him an extraordinary teacher, don't you think?
Yes. I mean, he values young people's minds and young people's souls and their hearts. And, of course, that's what all teachers should do, and many of them do. You know, I mean, one of the things about this book is that Lou Volpe is not one of one. Lou Volpe is one of tens of thousands, of hundreds of thousands of people who feel that they were put on this earth to teach.
Yes.
And, you know, that's what I'm honoring, one mm-hmm. of these many people. I think he's particularly gifted, and he's had, you know, the kind of approval from the outside that honors those gifts, but he's sure not the only one.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you said that. That's so true. And here's a guy who, when he started teaching a long time ago, he wasn't trained to be a drama teacher, was he?
No, he wasn't. That's one of the really unusual things about his career. He loved the theater. He went to the theater with his mother. He talked about theater with friends. But before he became drama director, he hadn't ushered. He hadn't sold a ticket. He hadn't acted. He hadn't done, you know, painted a set. He hadn't done anything. And as often happens in a school, he raised his hand to be assistant drama director. The person who was drama director left the faculty to become a chicken farmer. And you know, Lou found himself in this role, and he is very largely self-taught. And you know, one of the lessons of the book is maybe the not only the powers of teaching, but the powers of people to teach themselves things that they have a passion for, and not just teach themselves. I mean, do it seriously. Go to Yale in the summer. Go to Northwestern mm-hmm. in the summer. I mean, it's not just back of the envelope stuff.
Yeah, no, not at all. And the material that he's put before the students is really cutting edge. I mean, some of it, I'm sure, as you indicate, probably makes some of the parents and the other teachers go, oh my gosh, are you really going to put that on stage? It's really cutting edge, right out there material, isn't it?
Well, it is. I think it's appropriately out there. High school students, by the time they get to high school, have seen a lot, mm-hmm. especially in a working-class community like Levittown, Pennsylvania. They have relationships. They have troubles at home. You know, all kinds. They have sickness. They have classmates who have committed suicide. I mean, these are kids who, you know, are not coddled or not protected. Few of our kids are. So Lou Volpe did Rent in 2007. He was the first high school to do Rent, to stage Rent. And we may think of that as mainstream now. Many of its themes may seem mainstream, but about 150 high schools in America out of about 25,000 who do high school theater have done Rent. So high school theater sometimes can seem like, you know, chemistry without the discovery of DNA. I mean, it's back there a little bit. It's quaint. You know, it's wonderful, but they're not usually pushing the envelope.
Yeah. What did you say? Arsenic and Old Lace, Charlie's Aunt, that's one that we did, and
yeah.
Bye Bye Birdie, those kinds of shows, which are
yeah.
staples.
And they're wonderful, and they're fun, and they're classics for all the right reasons. But some of them are 50 and 60 and 70 years old, and if that's all that a high school theater program does, I think they're missing a learning opportunity. One of Lou's students, one of his very, very bright students, she said to me about the material that they do, which he talks about being on the knife's edge. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, that's one of the reasons to do theater, right? To work things out that in real life make people uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. It sure is. Why don't you tell this through the story of Good Boys and True? Because it's a marvelous story, what happens with it and what ultimately the success that they're able to achieve with this. But this is one of those plays that probably made some people gasp. The subject matter is, you know, very true to life, but dealing with some issues that a lot of people would rather not talk about.
Yes. Good Boys and True is a play by Roberto Aguirre Sacasa. He's a veteran playwright and TV writer. He's actually now writing for Glee. He also wrote for some HBO shows. He put Spider-Man back together when Spider-Man was a mess in New York. The play is about a vaunted high school prep quarterback who everyone loves, who picks up a girl at a high school, at a mall food court, and the very day that he meets her, they go back to a house and they have sex, and he films it secretly, and then his football teammates view this videotape, and it is a tape that may have been made to sort of cover up either a gay relationship that he has with his best friend or a gay interlude, depending on how you look at it. And look, this is the kind of thing that happens and has happened, but it's gripping for a high school actor and gripping for high school audiences to see, you know, the power of sex when it can go wrong,
mm-hmm.
to see secrets uncovered, because every high school kid feels like he or she is living with some terrible secret that the world, you know, is a day away from finding out. So this was just a tremendous play for them to put on, and they had six gloriously talented actors and actresses who were able to perform this, and it was a monumental performance for them.
The other thing that's amazing about this, and it leads me to believe that we've all got these hearts and souls inside us that just need to be tapped somehow, or somebody needs to figure out for us how we can tap into the depth of our emotional experience. But these are people who gave up playing football to be in theater, baseball players, you know, lacrosse players, not your typical thespian.
No, and that's one of the beauties of this program. The boys in this particular show play, where, as you say, one of them was a possible pro prospect in high school, an all-county player.
Ooh.
One of them was a football player who did leave the team to devote himself fully to theater, and the other a lacrosse player. And these boys were, you know, they were changed, yet I think it's important to say they were still themselves. You know, they found another part of themselves. They themselves felt more fully themselves because they were in this play, but they were also in shows where they sang and they danced. And this program at this high school is a coming together of all corners of the school in a way that rarely happens. When they did Rent at Harry S. Truman High, 300 students auditioned out of the 1,500 in the school.
Unbelievable!
Yeah, I mean, it's like a performing arts high school with, you know, de facto, without a charter.
And it is, he doesn't train students to go into performing arts, but as you list the number of people who have gone on to careers, really stellar careers in writing and performing and newscasting, it's quite a lengthy list.
It is a lengthy list. You know, there are dozens and maybe more than dozens of people who, you know, at all levels. There are a couple of students who are sort of bumping up against Broadway, you know, while they're tending bar and waiting tables, living that New York life.
Mm-hmm.
There are several of them. There are a couple of Emmy Award winners who are producers and writers out in Los Angeles. There's a very gifted producer and writer of independent film. So all across the board. But if I can just say, you know, the focus is not so much always on that. One of the boy who was the football player in Good Boys and True, and but he played a coach in the show, but he wants to go into law enforcement.
Hmm.
And I just can't think of a better background for law enforcement than many of the things you would learn in the theater about empathy and imagining other people's lives and teamwork and poise under pressure.
Right.
So it's you know, finding your way in all these different parts of yourselves that this theater program has done.
And there's a lovely part of the story, too, and it's happened time and again. I wasn't aware of this theater competition program that takes place in Nebraska, and a lot of the schools their programs have a whole lot of money coming into them. They're from fairly wealthy districts, kind of privileged districts, and here you got these kids from Levittown, you know, putting on these shows that are looking at the nitty-gritty parts of life, and they're winning. They're being invited to all of these competitions. I'll bet they're shaking things up in Nebraska.
Well, I think they do, because they bring the kind of theater that, you know, look, some other schools do bring this kind of theater, but very few. And the students in Levittown in this program are very looked down upon by their neighboring schools. Mm-hmm. Bucks County outside Philadelphia is pretty wealthy, but Levittown, where the steel mill has died, is distinctly not wealthy. So these kids go to play sports, say, at a neighboring high school, and they feel the other athletes are looking down their noses at them. They go to theater festivals, and people say, have the Harry S. Truman kids arrived yet? Are they here? You know, what are they doing? You know, one of the things I loved in Nebraska was some of the schools had very fancy playbills they'd prepared. And Lou just had this 9x11 sheet of paper folded over, but it listed all their accomplishments. And he said, I think that's enough, don't you think?
Oh, that's so good. Oh, this story just has so many levels of goodness. I just love it. Our guest this hour is Michael Sokolov. I don't know if you've had a chance to read the book. It just came out, so probably many of you didn't. But it was New York Times Sunday Magazine. When, Rhonda, can you hear me? Was it last week? In case you want to look it up, go online and you can, if you look at, Michael's last name is Sokolove. You can get a condensed version that's beautifully written because he writes for the New York Times Magazine of this story. The book is Drama High, the incredible true story of a brilliant teacher, a struggling town, and the magic of theater. It's so good. It's just such a good story. So join us. You want to? And you may want to, if you aren't familiar with this story, you know, maybe theater was an extremely important part of your high school life. Maybe other things were in high school, and you were in a school that, you know, was kind of rough and tumble, and there was a teacher, there was a program that really made a huge impact. We'd just love to hear from you. And you can send messages to us on our Facebook page as well. It's the September 23rd profile in the New York Times. So that was just this past week, right? What is it? September 26th, yeah. So that's where you can find it. Here's the number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, where we're asking you to tell the story of a teacher who changed your life, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. And that's it. That's all I have to say at the moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to some phone calls. Our guest is the author of Drama High, the incredible true story of a brilliant teacher, a struggling town, and the magic of theater. Michael Sokolov is our guest, and we go to Patty in Elm Grove. Hello, Patty.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
I'm just saying that the theater can sometimes be a life-changing event for a young person, which it was for me. I went to Pius High School in Milwaukee, and I was in many of the shows over the years, and our senior year we did You Can't Take It With You, and it was a wonderful show, and I played the part of Alice Sycamore, and the person that was my romantic lead across from me, I'd never spoken to in 4 years of high school, and we had this romantic lead opposite each other, and anyway, we've been married for 33 years. So the theater can change people's lives in many ways.
I guess it can. Well, that's a great story. Thanks very much for the call. Did you do theater in high school, Michael?
You know, there's a part of the book where I fess up and I say that I did not. I was an athlete, and at the time that I was going to high school, there wasn't that crossover, and there's still not in many schools. And Lou, there was a moment that I was still playing varsity baseball. I was a little better baseball player than a basketball player. I got cut from the basketball team, and he tried to get me to play a part in Come Blow Your Horn, and I just wouldn't do it. I couldn't imagine myself on stage. It was just not what a sports-playing boy did, and I regret that very much. And, you know, I didn't go back to do this book to correct that error in my life, but it was wonderful to dwell in this thing that I wouldn't step into when I was in high school. I mean, I was his devoted English student, and he was my mentor. But that thing, I wasn't doing it, and it was just starting out then. It wasn't nearly as big a program. It wasn't as celebrated a program. But I still should have done it.
Oh, it's okay. You've written all about it now. You've done it in so many ways and then some. You really have. I love the story, too, of, and there are many of these, but I love this story of bringing, which people in theater do, people in creative areas, you must do this all the time, too, is that you bring ideas. He brought them back to the high school from everywhere. And if you would please tell the story that one summer he took this trip to Spain, which led to an original piece and to his staring at a work of art, and what he thought about how art could help explain some of the evil in life.
Well, he was in the museum in Spain, and he looked at the big painting Guernica, and he was just so moved by it. He was so moved by the tragedy of what was portrayed in that painting, but he was also moved by the redemptive powers of art to both capture the tragedy, but to capture the hope of life, and art being the hope of life. And he came back to school, and he and the students and an art teacher collaborated on an original work of voice and dance and music that was inspired by this famous piece of art. And that also went to festivals. And, you know, I think the lesson for me is, as a teacher, all things were open, you know, to Lou Volpe. You know, anything that he was inspired by, he trusted his students to embrace and understand. And I knew that as his teacher, or I'm sorry, as when he was my teacher, the sort of transferring of passion. Like, I wanted, when I was in his classroom, you know, I wanted to read Fitzgerald. I wanted to read Flannery O'Connor. Mm. I wanted to read Hemingway. All of these authors that we were reading at the time, which was the canon at the time, because he loved them so much. And he had such a beautiful way of speaking about his love and his passion for literature that if you sat in his classroom, you thought, wow, this is just making this man so happy. You know, let me try to read these books as deeply as he does and see what comes from them. And, you know, that's... among other things, learning to have a passion, whether it's for theater or literature, and it's an important thing to learn as a child that,
yes,
that you can learn, you can love something deeply that is outside of yourself.
Yes. And now you've done, if I may say so, but I got to tell you, I read a lot of books for this job, and you have done just what he did. You've transferred your passion for all that is involved here, the story of this town, the students, the teacher, the everything. You've transferred that to us, too, so you know how to do this as well.
Which thank is, you so much for saying that.
You know, it's very, very
thank
true.
You for saying that.
The author, and I'm trying to remember, what was it, Dreiser, Sister Carrie? Is that the book?
Sister Carrie. Theodore Dreiser.
I haven't read that, but you just mentioned it in a sidebar somewhere that had been one of your favorites, and the ending wasn't terrific. But what? Why? Did you learn that in his class? Did you read it?
We read Sister Carrie, which, by the way, is not considered a great book, but I loved it because Sister Carrie Meeber, I believe was her name in the book, a small town girl, and she wants to get out of her small town in the worst way because it's just, you know, it's smothering her. And I certainly felt that way, as many people do, as many kids do, growing up in a smallish town, and you feel like this place is not for me and I just can't wait to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And Carrie got out of there. First she went to Chicago, and then she went to New York, and she fell into show business. She fell in with the wrong men. You know, her life just fell apart. But it was also very exciting. And I think as a kid, as a teenager, I missed the whole part about the perils of the city and the perils of the bright lights. I just thought, wow, she got out of there. You know, I love that story.
Let's go to Dan in Madison. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
All right, Dan, you?
I'm great. Say, listen, this is a delightful life listening, and it's great. I'll have to read the book. Mine is not about a drama teacher, but about a music teacher in high school who saw something in a kid and gave him an electric bass. And it was kind of funny because that led to about a 15-year career as a musician and roadie and all this other stuff. And, you know, this instructor was the kind of guy who could draw things out of you that you never knew were there. And, you know, I'm 45 years out of school, and his influence is still there. So that's about it. That's just what teachers can do for you.
Thank you, Dan. Teachers can do that for you, can't they? It's just pretty amazing, Michael, and we have the audacity to berate teachers. It's just such an incredibly important thing to be in life. It just is.
It is, and I didn't write a book about education policy or education politics, but I do think it's hard to read the book without thinking about some of those things, and I certainly was thinking about them when I wrote them. I just chose maybe not to hammer the points home, because that's not the book. The book is a reading experience. However, I think we have to give teachers, brilliant teachers, and there are many of them, we have to give them room to create and connect with students. And the more, you know, we test, the less we can do that. Mayor Rahm Emanuel, there's a part of the book where Rahm Emanuel, and I'm not going to get this quote exactly, but he said something about, you know, holding teachers accountable and responsible. And there's a certain way that teachers are talked about that it makes it sound like they're the kids. Like, if you don't hold them accountable and responsible, you know, you have to watch them or they'll misbehave. They'll wander off.
You're right.
And it's just, like, really insulting. I mean, I think that in a really desperate school or in an underperforming school, if you test, and you should test, and the test should be used. And maybe teachers who become dispirited and feel like their kids can't learn, you will identify some of them, but and you'll say, look, you're just not getting the job done. I mean, I really do understand that, but what I don't understand is assuming that without, quote, accountability, teachers themselves will be unaccountable. I mean, they're dedicated. They work hard. That's why they went into the profession.
Right. And teachers like Volpe really work hard, right? Because those rehearsals, I did a lot of drama in high school as well, and those rehearsals go on and on. It takes up a huge chunk of the day to teach and then do a theater.
Absolutely. I mean, for a musical, and I think this is common everywhere or many places, for a musical they rehearse every day after school. And then as the performance comes closer, they start rehearsing on Saturdays. All day with a break for lunch. And believe me, that's not fully compensated. He never got paid that much to be a drama teacher. The other thing I should add is that theater's cheap, you know, compared to the 6 or 8 assistant football coaches you need,
right,
or all the travel that is involved in sports, the uniforms and the equipment, you know. Theater doesn't have to be that way. Sometimes it is, but surely to do beautiful theater that aims really high is almost never about money. Lou always said to them, if all we had was a bare stage and one light bulb, we could do theater. And there's a lot of truth to that, and they could.
Mm-hmm. Jackie in Sun Prairie, hi.
Hi, dear. I taught in schools in southern Wisconsin and even some in northern Wisconsin for 2.5 decades. It would be through the 80s and 90s and early 2000s. And I was just astonished at the school that I was with, two schools that I was with, where the football players indeed did sing as tenors in the musical. And also in the school plays, that the men in the dance line with the young women, they had the dance master was I don't know, he was probably an all conference baseball player. And for years and years, we had a forensics program, and there are a lot of such programs in this state that excite kids to perform and to speak and to love poetry and love drama and theater. And there's a lot of that in the state, and it's just really impressive and downright thrilling when the best thing that kids could do on the weekend on Saturday is go to a forensics meet and perform there. It's delightful to know that over the years, a lot of those students, and I've met them years later, and I was a part of some of those programs, that they you know, it had a profound effect on them and makes a teacher think, oh, boy, I did something. I contributed. And another thing that people should be happy about, I think, is that Wisconsin has a lot of these programs all over, from small schools to large schools, where there are those special leaders who keep programs going over the years. So
yes, there are.
There's a lot to celebrate in that.
And Jackie, I was wondering, in those schools where the football players were dancing and involved in drama, et cetera, was there a special effort to recruit them, or how did it become acceptable for athletes to be on stage?
Well, it was kind of like a town, and this little town is just right north of Madison.
Oh.
And it was just an accepted thing to do. People, it wasn't just one teacher necessarily, but a whole bunch of people, and the parents kind of expected their children to do this as well. I think this particular school probably lost football games, had losing seasons for 10 years. but they did well in baseball and wrestling. But they managed to, all those years, it was more than just playing the sport.
Right.
And this is one school that I was affiliated with, but I found lots of other schools that, you know, continue to help students find their place.
Mm-hmm.
At something that they're good at and are
right.
comfortable at to help them achieve.
Right.
And I think that's one of the most important things about these so-called co-curricular activities.
Yeah. Thank you, Jackie, so much for the call. And let's talk about the emotional depths that are explored and how Lou was able to get his students, because that's obviously good drama. You're really... you're experiencing the depths of a person's soul, and they're portraying it in such a way that it's believable and it's moving, or it can be funny or whatever. But to get that kind of performance, which I've never seen his shows, but from your writing about it, he did on a fairly regular basis. How do you get that out of 15, 16, 17-year-old students at this school? What did he do?
Well, and let me just real briefly say something about what Jackie
sure.
said. That's wonderful what she's saying, and Wisconsin is a very strong high school theater state. So I'm not surprised to hear what she said, and I think that that's what happens when you respect theater and you respect the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to disrespect anything else. You don't have to disrespect football. It certainly does help if it's a high school where the football team isn't very good. So I'm just thrilled to hear what she said. I'm not surprised, because Wisconsin is known, you know, for high school theater.
Mm-hmm. And for the forensics program for middle school students,
yes.
too, right?
Yes. So in terms of attracting, of coaxing these performances, one thing that really struck me, I grew up in Levittown when the steel mill was employing 10,000 people and all kinds of other industrial giants were going, and times were good. Times are not good now. And students have difficult lives and they see difficult things. So one way I think that this school and Lou Volpe's program is advantaged is the children are not cosseted, they're not privileged, they're not sheltered as privileged children sometimes are. You know, parents who have means sometimes want to protect their kids from all things bad, and that can't happen in this particular town. So first of all, Lou is taking students who have already felt things. They felt some bad things. And then to then coax performances on stage that, you know, with plays in which there's conflict, there's betrayal, there's sadness, there's redemption, you know, they're right with it because they've felt it. And they're happy to see that on stage people can go through things and they can work it out, and it can either ends well or it doesn't. But, you know, you can put it up there on stage. I think the other answer to how does he do it, he expects it. He sets the standards really high. And even though, you know, I didn't write a book about education policy, one of the things I did note is there's nothing that he does in his theater program or that he did that wouldn't fit into the muscular language of education reform. You know, high standards, reaching for the top. I think... if you don't do that in a theater program or a football program or basketball, but, you know, whatever it is, any of the extracurriculars, you're doing a disservice. It's not the, you can still have fun. You can still form relationships. You can still find a high school sweetheart you may marry, as as an earlier caller did. You know, all of these incredible friendships and joy can happen, but they happen along with, you know, really reaching for as high as you can reach. And that to me is one of the very simple answers about this theater program, which is we can do theater at as high a level as we want. One theater teacher elsewhere in Pennsylvania said to me, the rest of us do high school theater. Lou does theater.
And what is it that he says? I can't remember the phrase exactly. It's one to remember, actually, for all of us, when he's trying to get the best out of a performer and the young performer is just not getting it. He doesn't put them down. He inspires them to do better. But what's the phrase? Do you remember it?
Well, I think he sometimes says you have to find your character.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty common theater phrase. You know, one of the things that he said that really stuck with me one day as a performance was growing near. He said, you know, you guys have gotten so good that every mistake you make has a spotlight shining on it. And I just thought that was
perfect.
Wonderful, because in very economical use of words, he praised them and he demanded more. And the thing that fascinated me in watching him was it was never scripted. I mean, he just has a way of speaking that goes to the heart of things and goes into the souls of these children.
Mm-hmm. Jackie, thank you so much for your call. And you can reach our conversation if you'd like. Our number is 800-486-8655. The email talk@wpr.org. Michael Sokolov is our guest. He's a contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine and his author. He's written other books, but the book we're talking about this hour is just this great story. It's so inspirational and I think all of you would love it. It's titled Drama High, The Incredible True Story of a Brilliant Teacher, a Struggling Town, and the Magic of Theater. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to phone calls, more of them. Kathleen in Hammond. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
All right. How are you?
I'm good. I'm delighted with this conversation today. My mother actually was a high school English teacher and taught drama before she got married and had kids, and it's always was a delight to hear her stories of kids who had a passion, even in a small, rural, north central Wisconsin town, which is also my hometown.
Wonderful.
And I want to express my appreciation for the hard work that those people do out there that impacts kids beyond. And also to Jackie for bringing up the forensics program. I hadn't thought of forensics in years, and what a pleasure it was, even as a kid, slightly scared, to have a lot of Wisconsin kids turn into people that have become very adept public speakers.
Yes.
I think is a credit to our forensics program. But the one thing I want to say, what your guest mentioned earlier in the conversation, was just the line of what an impact one teacher or authority figure can have. And one thing they say that hasn't been said by a teacher or a parent before, and I remember I was a senior in a small, rural, north central Wisconsin high school and had applied to colleges and had applied to Northwestern University. And it was kind of my dream to go there. And everyone was getting their, you know, admission letters and acceptance letters. And I got a letter that said I had been put on the wait list.
Hmm.
And, you know, and everyone I told and the teachers were asking and curious, and I'd say, oh, well, I'm on the wait list. And almost everyone, like as if there'd been a death in the family, said, oh, you know, I'm sorry, and that's too bad, or things like that. And I had one teacher, a biology teacher, who was just so outstanding anyway. And the lesson, and he looked at me and he said, that's fantastic. You've got your foot in the door.
Oh.
And the lesson wasn't so much, you know, it's great. You might get a chance to go to the school that you wanted to.
Uh-huh.
It was a lesson, a lifelong lesson about attitude.
Right.
And how you look
right.
at things. And just, he was the one person that said the right thing at the right time. And you know what? I went home and I wrote a letter to the admissions office saying how much I wanted to go to Northwestern and was accepted eventually.
Mm.
And so that man, in one sentence, impacted the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And and the power of a teacher in one sentence, in one lesson.
Wonderful story.
Amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks, Kathleen. Wonderful story. Well, yeah, and it's so true what she said. You remember it. That's it. Northwestern, I think that Lou went to Northwestern, too. It still has a reputation for a fine theater school.
Yes, he went there over a summer to learn more about theater.
Mm-hmm. All right. Isn't it great, these people, so many years later, Michael, who are remembering either their parents or their teachers or the programs that they did? It stays with you your whole life.
It's fantastic. And you know, in high school, when we are 14, 15, 16, 17 years old, 18, you know, depending on how old you are, it's such an age where you're discovering who you are in so many different ways. And you need help. And you really need affirmation from outside your family as well. You know, sometimes you get it from your friends, but teachers who have wisdom are so important. And again, you know, testing and accountability are a whole different subject. But I've yet to meet a person who said, that person was so influential in my life. They raised my SAT scores.
Right.
Or they raised my standardized test scores. And I don't think that's ever going to be the case.
No.
There's a human interaction. Mm-hmm. There's a magic between teachers and students. And some teachers are better at it than others. But so many of them try. And there's a real love between teachers and students. And, you know, we just have to remember how important that is. And remember that it doesn't happen when we're putting the kind of pressure on teachers that isn't a good kind of pressure. You know, the kind of pressure that makes them feel in a small box, I don't think that's going to work very well.
Kathleen, thank you for your call. Mark on Alaska, hi.
Hi. Great program, Kathleen and Michael. I just want to comment on something that you made me think of, Michael, is that I think whether it be art or sports or drama, people want to be part, or kids, anybody wants to be part of a quality program. And when you have success, it really breeds success. And whether it be so... where my kids went to school, the show choir was, which I hated, but that was the incredible, incredible successful program because of a particular individual. And everybody, all the athletes, want to be part of that. And I think drama having is the same thing. If people can be part of an incredible drama program, boy, they want to jump on. So
I think that's a great point. You know, success can be a little bit underrated. It's important for there to be something within a school or an institution that's successful. And, you know, it doesn't have to be about competition, but it's really important to say, yes, I associated with something and I contributed to something in some big or small way that was winning, that was succeeding. And in this particular high school, just like you're talking about, there's not that much that anybody says this is the top of the heap. So, you know, it's pride. It's important to be able to take pride in something. And it's also important to be able to say, I pushed myself to qualify to be part of that thing.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, Mark. Monica in Greenfield. Hi.
Hi, thank you for a great program. It touches my heart. I remember almost, I would say, all of my teachers very fondly. I graduated from a high school of 17. We were 17 in the class.
Oh.
I went to a college where I had to take a city bus to go from some of my morning classes to the afternoon classes, like imagine a Madison campus in Mexico. And it was such a strong program that when I was in a class of 99 in college, so I went from 17 to 99 in the class. And I was taking my first math test, and a lot of people were saying that it was a trick question. So I looked at it, I did it, and I went and showed it to the teacher because I thought I had it wrong. I said, am I wrong? And he looked at it. He took the test out of my hand, and he said, get out of here. And nobody knew what was going on, but I did. And I looked at him as I started walking, and he said, and by the way, tell your math teacher what a wonderful work he did. And it was just, it made me feel I'm going to make it here. And I was 16 years old when I started college, and I was so proud of this program that I was part of. And the drama, we did Garcia Lorca, we did Shakespeare, a class of 17 where we had to paint our own props and a newspaper.
That's great.
That's a great. That is a great story. And you can do theater, you can do drama in very small groups. You can do lots of things with a little.
You know, if you were here, if I were looking at you in the eye right now, I'd say, Michael, let's do a show. I'm so ready to do a show of some kind. I don't know what it should be. Thanks, Monica, for the call. I wanted to, before we go back to phone calls, and we're running out of time, but I'm wondering what Lou thought when you know, this acclaimed New York writer for the New York Times, of all things, wanted to do a book on him. Did he shy away, or was there, you know, enough, well, I want my work to be recognized, for him to embrace your request?
I was afraid that he would shy away, because you have to remember, when he was my teacher, he was in his mid-20s, and I remembered him as self-effacing and somebody who didn't necessarily want attention called to him. And there's still that element of him. He's not a showman. However, he immediately embraced this. I mean, he was at that then, you know, it was a long way down the road. And he is proud of what he has done, and he was proud to participate. And I think he's also, now that you know, some reviews have come out of the book, some early reviews, and he's seen the response to it, he realizes that he is being embraced for some important reasons.
Yes.
Having to do, you know, one of the things he said is, it's important that we don't just train children, but we educate the whole child. And, you know, that's something that's hugely important to him, and he knows that the book is a vehicle to put that message out.
Mm. Great. Deborah in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Remember when I was growing up in the UP, I auditioned with my mom and sister for The Sound of Music, and the girl in front of me, who auditioned before me, cried. And so I got up there, and I cried too, and I never forgot that, but I loved drama, and after sailing to England, and then I decided I wanted to be an actor, and so I moved to New York City, was a nanny, and went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, worked at Radio City Music Hall as an usher, and ended up over the course of the next 8 years being in four major motion pictures as an actor and a stand-in. And I think drama is just so important. I think it's living life out on stage, and it's a great outlet. It's just awesome.
I guess it has been awesome for you. It's also difficult too. It's to find a place to do this for a living is difficult. But that's a terrific story. Thank you, Deborah, very much for being with us. Well, I hate to say goodbye to you. It's sort of like that, you remember this, that when the bell, you don't want the bell to ring, right? You want to
exactly.
keep talking.
That's one of the things Lou said, when he knew he taught a great class when the bell rang and nobody wanted to leave.
Right, and he taught a lot of those. Is he still teaching or not?
He has retired.
This is
his first year not teaching, and his assistant director, a woman named Tracy Krause, who was his student and was his assistant, has taken over this program and maintained the same ambition, but it's big shoes she's stepping into, so it'll be very interesting to see what happens.
Mm-hmm. That must be very, very difficult for the school, because she may do a wonderful job, but and may in her own right become an extraordinary teacher, but to say so long, you hate to see it happen. You want some people to live for a long, 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 long time.
It's very difficult, and he was a teacher at that school for 44 years.
Oh, my gosh.
He walked into that school at 21 years old, and he never left. So it was, you know, a love affair of its own kind between him and a school and the school and him. And, you know, we celebrate careers in sports. We celebrate careers in entertainment. But to me, this is a celebrated career as a school teacher.
I couldn't agree more. Aren't you glad that you decided you'd finally do the book?
I really am. I've done some exciting things as a journalist. I've worked, I think, you know, at levels probably beyond what I ever dreamed of. But this book is the honor of my professional life.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely that.
Oh, it's such a marvelous book, Michael. I can't recommend it enough. I just loved it. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed talking to you and to your great guests who called in.
Yeah, it's a good group. Thanks. Michael Sokolov, the book is Drama High, the incredible true story of a brilliant teacher, a struggling town, and the magic of theater. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and K.P. Whaley, who produced this program. Great conversations ahead. We'll be with you again on Monday.